This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Transform the way you hunt with the all-new Base cellular trail camera connected by the Moultrie mobile app. Moultrie Mobile's industry-best app gives you complete control over your camera settings, up-to-the-minute updates from the field, and other interactive scouting tools on your smartphone or computer. Features like weather forecast, advanced species recognition, interactive maps, and a whole lot more. For more information and to make your purchase, visit www.moultriemobile.com.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need, from athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace, to nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist! Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the O2 Podcast, the Ohio Outdoors Podcast. Paul!
What's going on, man?
How are you today?
You know, I'm tired.
I can imagine. You've kind of been around the world twice.
Yeah, I was in, New York City for 24 hours?
That's what it felt like.
It was cool. I got there. My first time to the big city, and it was just, it was fun. It was. I got there late Friday. I wanted to have New York pizza was the first thing that I wanted to try. You know, I'm just like this dumb redneck. I'm like, New York pizza. And everyone was closed, all the pizza shops, for whatever reason. So I had a steak
in the city that doesn't sleep.
I mean, yeah, in the city that doesn't sleep. So it kind of made me mad, actually. I'm like, this city's bullshit. Like, doesn't sleep. Like, what is their Google says they're open. The first one I went to, they had metal doors down and
So you're telling me we had better luck finding pizza in Louisville in the middle of a snowstorm than
you did? Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So there's this, and this is how dumb I am, being from Licking County, Johnstown, Ohio, Patapsco, Ohio. I thought that I was going into this restaurant, right? Because there's this restaurant, there's this giant metal door, and I'm like, it's kind of a bad area. I open this door, I walk in, it was like an entrance into someone's apartment. Like a stairway, and there's just these people that are there, and there's these mailboxes, and I'm just standing there, and I just slowly, it was like that Homer Simpson meme where I just back up into the bushes as fast as I can. I'm like, I am way out of my element.
Oh, but, shoot.
Yeah. Had a good time. I was down there with the New York City chapter of the Backcountry Hunters and Anglers.
There is such a thing.
There is. I'll tell you what, man, I was very surprised. There's a strong contingent of hunters and anglers in the city of New York, in New York City. I mean, those people, they are passionate about what they do. I met a good number of them. There's a lot of them there. They said just some really good people. Great, great organization. Check them out. BHA.org, I think. Or, you know, if you just search Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. Their big thing is, like, public property and those public property rides. So, yeah, it was cool meeting all those people. Fished for, like, 8 or 10 hours. Caught some fish. And then I packed up and headed home. Drove all the way, all through the night. Got home at, like, 4:15 this morning. 7:30, my girls jump on me. They're like, "Do you want pancakes, Daddy?" And I'm just like, yeah, I do.
Of course,
so,
you do.
Let's get up. Yes, let's get up. So it was, I mean, all in all, it was good, man. But tomorrow, taking off to Iowa for a little bit, and then Kentucky later this week. So no rest of the wicked, man.
Oh my God.
And then I got to, like, I'm missing your hunt. I'm missing your lottery hunt. I got to go to freaking South Carolina for an all hands meeting. So I don't, you know, I don't know what higher ups at the NWTF, if anyone listens to this podcast, but I just want you guys to know that there is also a turkey hunting season in the northern half of this country. And it just started. And you're making me go down to South Carolina where there's no turkey hunting. I can't turkey hunt there.
Are they done down there?
Yeah, everyone's done. Like, Mississippi's last day was the Alabama's. All these southern states are all, they're all. I mean, hell, a lot of them started in March.
Yeah.
So like all the New York guys, like, they just started today. New York, Pennsylvania, all those guys, and they're making us go down for like four or five days. For, I mean, it's going to be fun. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be cool to see the coworkers, and But, you know, there's also a month called June where there's no turkey hunting. Just plan a little bit next time. But anyway,
I'm very disappointed that you will not be there with me.
I know. I'm sorry. But you had a fun weekend, too.
I did. Yeah. So I had the opportunity to go up to Lake Erie.
Where'd you take out of?
Port Clinton.
Okay. So classic.
Actually, just down the road from where I grew up, which was nice. Got to go home and see Mom and Dad. But, we went out for... Oh, man, I don't know, 6 or 7 hours, I guess, maybe 8, what it ended up being, whatever. It was cold start to the morning, about 40 degrees.
I saw you bundled up in that First Light Origin hoodie. I think it looked
great. Okay, we're going to stop and talk about that real quick.
Dude, I was real jealous of that because I was a little cold there for a minute.
That sweatshirt was clutch because it had the built-in face mask. And initially I'm like, when am I ever really going to use this? Well, I used it. And
April
it was
on Lake Erie.
Amazing. Yeah, so
good deal.
But we did pretty good. We did walleye, and we were jig fishing. Once we got the hang of it, we started pulling some in.
Did you?
So I think the boat pulled in 26 total.
How many guys were on there?
Six.
And it looked like a decent-sized boat in the picture.
Yeah, they're 32-foot, I think. But it was nice. It was good. And actually, I'm going to try to get that captain on here.
Oh, really?
Let's see if we can talk to him a little bit. But... So the boat pulled about 26. I really thought we would limit out real fast because everything, the reports we were getting was the fish were biting hard.
Yeah.
But it was fun. It was good. Good company. We we kept calling it the Make-A-Wish boat because the captain, he'd be fishing, and then there's this one guy with us, Joel. Joel, you probably don't listen, but if you do, shout out to you. Joel's bundled up, and he looked special.
And, did he have a big puffy jacket on?
Yeah, and like six layers. But then the captain would like be pulling in a fish and be like, "Here, Joel, I need help with this fish." And like, and then Joel would pull it out and be like, "Oh, Joel, you got another Make-A-Wish fish." Like,
Joel's like, "Shut up, asshole."
No, he played along great. And then he kept giving there's one guy on the boat that was a big fisherman, and he got about one or maybe two fish the whole day. But he kept saying, "Hey, Kevin, I got 4 fish." They don't count, Joel. They're Make-A-Wish fish. They don't count, okay?
That's funny.
Yeah, but it was really good. It was a good time. The Reef Stalker was the name of the boat we were on. We had Captain Terry, but his son Eric is also heavily involved. So we'll work on that, though, down the road.
Did you catch any sheephead or any, like, gobies or anything?
Okay, yeah. So we did. We caught Joel caught one sheephead.
Yeah, that a boy, Joel.
Captain Terry, he caught a smallmouth that was a monster.
Nice.
I don't know how big that thing was. I got a picture of it. But
big old sucker. So we were in New York, not New York Harbor, Long Island Sound. So it was all salt water. And I didn't catch one, but a couple people caught these things called ocean robins, something like that. And dude, they were like the gnarliest. Oh yeah, that's a big old chunk. Damn, look at that thing. That's a big smallmouth. That's real big.
Yeah, and they're not supposed to be biting right now. So when he pulled that thing up, we were like, whoa, what the hell is that?
I'd take pictures and throw that back. But yeah, so there's like these red robin or like ocean robins. They were like bright red. And they had these massive wings on them. And they were gnarly looking. Like, I did not, I saw them, I'm like, I wouldn't touch that. I mean, that thing looks like an alien. It was insane looking. So yeah, it was really neat seeing some of that stuff that, you know, you don't see. It was funny. So we're catching these things called porgies, and I caught the second fish of the day, and I pull it up and I'm looking at it. I'm like, this is the sheephead. I was like, you guys can call it a porgy. This is a sheephead. I just drove 10 goddamn hours to catch sheephead. Like, I can do that in Ohio.
Right.
And so I Googled it, and sure enough, it's like a saltwater drum that they call sheepheads and or porgies. And these guys swore up in there, like, this is one of the best eaten fish out there. These sheephead looking.
So we were talking earlier, but I don't know what it was. It was something on the Meat Eater lineup. They had done an episode. Holy smokes, that thing.
That's the sea robin. Look at that damn thing. I'm going to put this on Instagram. Just go wild. They're not neat look. That. Can you imagine the first human that ever pulled one of those out of the water? The thing looks like a demon. Yeah, I wouldn't eat that.
I wouldn't.
There ain't no way I'd eat that.
Were they eating them?
I don't. Yeah, they were flaying them up. Huh. I didn't take it.
Interesting.
So sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you with my demon fish. I didn't even know what the hell you were talking about.
Yeah, I don't either.
We'll just take two. A little Ron Burgundy, take two. So. Yeah, I honestly have no idea what we were talking about.
Wow.
What's in the...
That screwed up fish just messed with my head, man.
Yeah, that's what it is. So let's talk. So archery hike, Justin Ross doing his thing. We're going to talk about that. It's July, I believe, 17, 18, 19. We're unprepared with the dates, but that's going to be really cool. Email Justin, archeryhike@gmail.com, or check him out on Facebook and or Instagram. Same name, Archery Hike, on both of them. So that's going to be really cool. Send it, Slam, Go Wild. That is going to be one hell of a party.
Yeah, that's
so
July
9th. So we've been calling them tee times. Do you know what they're actually called for the archery competition?
Flights?
Knock time. So that's the actual term. So tickets are still available for that. You can get on Time to Go Wild, get on your Go Wild app, check that out. That's going to be really, really good event. Family friendly, 4-hour drive, hop in your car, hop in your truck, take the family, go on down there. That's when is that, July 7th?
No, that's July 9th.
July 9th.
That one I do know. And here I got the archery hike one is the following weekend, be July 15th to 17th.
There you go. Yeah, that's going to be a good time. So if you haven't downloaded Go Wild yet, do it. GoWild.com, find in the App Store, Google Play, free $10, all sorts of stuff for sale on there right now. So ton of fishing stuff. So that's pretty neat.
Dude, and so it's so much fun to watch and see people that you know or you meet along the way picking up.
So this is the this is like the point of the year where I haven't killed something yet, and I start seeing like those trophies, like Andrew Mutz got a trophy. I'm like, you know what? No, I'm not looking at this. I'm gonna click mark all is red, and good for you guys, because it's jealousy. It's 100% petty jealousy, and like, I'll admit it.
Like that 16-year-old girl.
Oh yeah, I should have two turkeys dead right now. That's what really makes me mad.
Their
life
is so much
Derek. Derek, I know. I hope you're listening. Today's Sunday. A lot of pressure on you, my friend. So down there in Kentucky, I can't wait. But tetherednation.com, saddle systems. I cannot wait to get my hands on that thing. I cannot wait. I've been looking at them on their website. Been watching videos. I feel like I'm mentally prepared to get. To get up in a tree. The only thing is, I don't have any good trees in my backyard. So, my neighbor, I've been eyeballing some of his trees. He's got this little area in the back. I might see if he'll let me get up there.
I say we just go to the park. I'll just get all those people to look at us funny.
Well, I mean, I don't want people to make fun of me.
They're all gonna laugh.
They're
at
all gonna
you.
Laugh at you, dude. I remember this is probably like 15 years ago. Kenny and I were hunting. We were at Delaware, and we had like these Summit Viper climbing stands. And so we get in the tree. Like Kenny's like, well, watch me get up in case I fall. So I stand there. He gets up and he's like, do you think I'm high enough? And I walk up and I set my chin on the seat, like of his chair. I'm like, no, you're not high enough. yeah, tetherednation.com. Find them on the website. Find them on Instagram. Follow our buddies.
Now's the time to get your stuff, right?
Yeah. Well, they were talking about like how like their big order is like right before the season. In August, people start to order. You need time, man. I'm gonna order mine here real soon, and I'm gonna start practicing. Absolutely. Because I'm gonna do it. I want to be able to do it at 5 in the morning
in the dark
when it's 20 degrees. Yeah, and I can't see anything and I'm cold. So, yeah, I think it's gonna be good. So, let's see turkey updates, man. I'm running a little low. I haven't hunted since Thursday. Thursday morning, I went out just very briefly. New spot, so yeah. Did you do any turkey hunting without me?
No.
I'm ruining your. I'm real sorry about your.
No, see, you're not ruining. My problem is that. Well, we can all make excuses, but springtime in this industry that I work is very insane. So
it's literally the biggest.
It's the worst.
Yeah, it's the busiest time of the year for you.
Yeah.
So.
But no, actually, so starting today's May 1st, well, May 2nd, so a couple days before this comes out,
Monday, May 2nd, all day.
There you go. Southern Zone are then open, not just the morning. So we got all day hunting coming up, 30 minutes before sunrise, sunset.
Yeah. I know as weird as like the birds have been acting on the properties, the public land that I've been hunting. I'm kind of wondering if they're going to be a little more active, that 11 to 2, 11 to 4 time slot when we're all out of the woods, you know, like I mean, I stay until noon every time, but so I'm looking forward to seeing how that second shift, if you will, if them boys start gobbling a little more. So,
yeah, I think I don't know. Right. Because yeah. I haven't hunted turkeys as long as you have. Something seems off, though.
It's weird. This is one of the weirder years. I was talking about some like that same thing with some guys. Like it's kind of weird. People are still killing. They're still killing them. It's down. I mean, that first week was down over what was it? That first weekend?
A couple hundred birds.
Yeah, well, no, 900. It was down 900 over that opening weekend from the year before.
Off the, oh, okay.
Well, the three year average, it was down 900 turkeys.
But yeah, like a lot of. The guys, even some of them out in Missouri and stuff, I mean, real quiet, and then it's like all of a sudden, bam.
It's going to kick. Yeah,
it's just going to open up. In. So I don't know. There are pictures, guys taking birds, so it's happening. Yeah. Like you said, I feel like it's moving a little bit slower maybe than...
Yeah. Pressure's been good. Hunting pressure on the areas that I've been. I've had some run-ins, but I've had years that have been a lot worse. So, yeah. I don't know.
Well, this weekend, I get to go out up on my lottery hunt, so I'm pretty excited about that one.
Mother's Day, you're going to be hunting turkeys. How's that going?
Well, I know she isn't listening to this.
So how'd she take it when you told her? Because when I asked my wife before I had remembered my trip to South Carolina, she was like, no, I will stab you in the neck with my Mother's Day gift that you're not going to get.
shoot. We don't celebrate a whole lot of holidays like that. So, and I told her we'll take her out to dinner and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, Mother's Day, it's just as important. Who gives a shit?
Yeah,
what day it is, you know?
Yeah.
Honor your wife, honor your mothers, all that good stuff.
So. I still owe her for our wedding anniversary, a 10-year anniversary. So we got to get
You're digging a hole, man.
Yeah.
I'm digging a real big hole because I'm turkey hunting a ton and I'm traveling a ton for like the next 5 weeks. So, oh, God.
Yeah.
I don't know what my summer's going to be like. But
I think we're going to be hanging out a lot together because we're going to be in the shit list.
Exactly. As long as I smack a bunch of turkeys, it's all worth it, right? So,
yeah, I don't know if we got anything else. Oh, we got some updates on our website. So if anybody goes, if you go over to the number two podcast.com, we got some new merchandise up there. If anybody's interested in some shirts or hoodies, got a couple different patterns on there. We're working on hats for you guys. If there's
lots of color options coming our way.
Yeah,
we're going to have
all
some
kinds of,
yeah, some stuff. Decals, some hats. Yeah. There's some cool stuff.
And
so
if you see something on there, you don't like the color, just like, let me know. We can probably put it together, get a mock-up for you.
Well, I put that black and orange on my Instagram. That got a ton of Like, people really like that. I like that. I like that color. So
yeah, it was sharp. So
yeah, it's a good one.
But that one's not up on the website yet. But if you like that one, feel free to email us.
Yeah, hats are coming. And
yeah, we're getting there. We're building it one day at a time.
Are we doing the banana hammocks? Are we gonna get O2 podcast banana? I mean,
that's on your OnlyFans, isn't it?
I can't wear one, but I mean, can get someone of our fans out there
the
can
Borat suits?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh shoot, this is getting sideways quick.
All good.
What are we talking about this week, Paul?
So we are talking about fly fishing with Jacob and Derek from Go Wild, and I'm gonna apologize now. I had like massive technical difficulties. The audio board that I use for mixing just completely took a crap right before this, so I'm literally using the audio on my computer, and I should have just sat there. I don't even know why I tried to talk. Like, you guys had a great conversation, and I had some questions that I wanted to know, but I've done some fly fishing, not a ton. I've caught a couple smallmouth bass, but we go deep into equipment. You went through like a rod build, which was like a setup build, which was really neat. So this is a good one. I would like to have some more fly fishing discussions on this show, because man, it's such a cool activity, you know. And it's something outside of the norm. So I think you guys will enjoy it. I apologize for my audio. Andrew, your audio sounded fine. So
yeah, we're working on that. So
I was just mad the entire time we were doing that. I was so mad. I was so mad that damn XLR digital box or whatever fuzzed out, and it happens. But
it's got to be one. It's one of those feelings like when you forget your wallet and you're gone for the day, and you're like, maybe you don't even need it, but just in the back of your mind, like, yeah, I don't have that. Something's not right.
Yeah. Well, so like forgetting wallet, I don't think I told the story. When I went to Alabama, I got like I was almost to Louisville, and I pulled over to get gas. I told you this. I left my wallet at home. This is like 5 in the morning, and my wife, God love her, I love her, had to pack our children, wake them up, pack them up, and bring them down. Like, I drove as far as I could. I got just north of Cincinnati before I was damned. I had like 10 miles left to go.
Man, Ashley, you're the best.
She had to drive that wallet down. So
you're so good.
Yeah, I wish I would have had
you're
that.
Awesome,
like,
Ashley.
Yeah. Yeah, quit bitching about me turkey hunting so much. I'm kidding. I love you. So yeah, this is gonna be good. It's gonna be a good episode this week. Fly fishing with the Go Wild guys. They're selling that. They talked about it. They're gonna have some fly fishing setups on their website that you can buy through the website or the app. That'll be really neat. But there's some, and it's not just like trout streams, man. I mean, you can like fly fish for bluegill and smallmouth and largemouth bass, and I mean any body of water in the state of Ohio, you can fly fish it. So I did the Big Darby, was where I went. Had a little success, and I didn't get far off the beaten path there, so I'm not blowing up any secrets, but yeah, it was cool.
Yeah, I don't think they've got their kits in here yet.
Oh, really? Yeah, they're coming, they said.
They're working on it.
Yeah, they'll get their check back, but yeah, so I mean, if you're in Ohio, just, you know, try to find some, there are some trout streams. You know, you can dig a little deep into those, but
yep.
Yeah, what else you got, man?
Man, I think that's it. We'll see what comes next week, but hopefully we've got some dead birds is the goal.
I hope so.
We'll have to figure out, yeah, what else we got going on.
We can talk about, like, the chart that we were looking at earlier. Say, just express our appreciation to our listeners. The 233. The damn picture that I sent you.
Yeah.
Jesus. There's this website that tracks like downloads and listens and engagements with podcasts, and because of you guys listening to this show, and I'll tell you what, Andrew, I never expected this show to be as popular as it is becoming, and man, I love every one of you guys. I was blown away. We are now in the top 250 of the, and this is like outdoor. So I think they call it wilderness. So it's hunting, fishing,
hiking,
camping, hiking, backpacking, mountain biking, rock climbing. Like it's a lot. I mean, it's a lot of podcasts. And we, I mean, that was like, when I saw that, I was like, holy shit.
Right. No,
and
it's
so
great.
You guys are awesome. We're gonna do some listener appreciation stuff here this summer. So keep an eye out for that. So,
but we're obviously on the Sportsman's Empire Network. Okay, we got a little name change there, but nothing else is gonna change. And so a lot of it's thanks to the guys before us, Dan Johnson and all that kind of stuff. And Dan gave us some rundown, some numbers last week. I mean, it's really exploding. So we really appreciate you guys. Everything, if you want to leave us a review on any of the podcast platforms, that'd be awesome.
I haven't figured out how to read reviews on Spotify yet to see if anyone's doing it. Yeah, I don't know. So if you are, find us on GoWild on Instagram, screenshot, and be like, yo, send us the free stuff that you're always talking about.
There you go.
You leave us a review, you get free stuff. So
Stickers.
Yeah.
For now.
We got some cool, maybe some cooler stuff coming.
There we go.
So. In the works. Instagram. Thank you for listening.
Yes. Please follow us on Instagram. It's the.o2.podcast. Yep. Twitter, it's @OhioHunt.
Mm-hmm.
And Go Wild, of course, is O2Podcast.
Yep.
And like I said earlier, theo2podcast.com. If you got anything, you can hit us with an email there. Just go from there.
Appreciate you guys listening, man.
Yes. Take care, everybody. Have a good week.
See you.
James, you turkey hunt?
I do. I have not yet this year.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Been kind of slacking.
Oh.
Working. Well, working Eric's too been hard.
Been. So, Eric's been. I that's how I want to start this. I want to hear the story. From Derek on exactly what's going on. So welcome back to the O2 podcast and Ohio Outdoors podcast. We've got our guests tonight, Jacob Knight and Derek Towles. It's Towles, right? That's how you pronounce it?
It's Towles, actually.
Towles, okay. Derek Towles. Yep. Some friends of ours from Go Wild, and we're going to do a little fly fishing talk tonight. But let's see. Today is April 21st. I don't know when we'll run this one. But Derek, tell us about your adventures in the woods last weekend that turned out successful.
Yeah. I'll try to make it pretty quick. It was Easter Sunday. Didn't hunt that morning. Decided to go out that afternoon, got set up, probably about 2:00. I'd set up in a little small field kind of in the back of the property that I hunt that, like, historically we just never hunted much there. Not sure why, but when I was leaving the previous evening, I'd seen some turkey back there. So I figured why not. Went and got set up back there 2:00, like I said, about 4:00. I heard just one random gobble crack off behind me, close enough to where I was like, all right, I can do something with that bird. So, started calling at it and it got quiet again for a little while. Well, then I started hearing the hen that was with him. And so I tried the old technique of calling over the hen. So every time she started making yelps, I would start yelping, just doing everything she was doing, mimicking her, calling on top of her. And I could tell it was working. So she got upset. She was getting closer, started just screaming her head off at me. And I'm just, giving every call I can at her. And sure enough, I see her coming over my left shoulder, kind of through the woods. And she's close at this point, probably 40 yards through the woods. And I got two decoys out in the field in front of me, a Jake and a hen decoy. Well, she, I guess, sees them and cuts off into the field. And I still can't see the tom. I'm still not even 100% sure he's with her because he hasn't gobbled yet since that first gobble I heard. Well, then finally I see his little blue head poke up over a little hill in the field. And I guess he was using kind of a low point to travel. That's why I didn't see him until he was in the field. And so he worked out into the field, kind of hooked around, and then started coming up into the decoys. And at this point, the hen was so close, I feel like I could have reached out and touched her at one point. So I'm trying to do everything I can to not move, using diaphragm calls. And finally, he walked right into a spot where I had a shooting lane, took the shot, and that was it.
Kaboom.
It's like a classic turkey hunt. That's awesome, man.
My heart was pounding out of my chest, especially when that hen was there. she could bust me at any moment, and this is over.
Yeah, that's like, I'm sure I would have been in a total panic the entire time she was around. So don't putt.
Yeah, I was.
Good.
That's funny. It's great when you're talking about
good deal. So
I was gonna say, when you're talking about talking over the hens and stuff, it just reminds me of my kids when like one is mimicking the other, and you know, they just go back and forth, and then they like want to fight with each other. So he or she was coming to fight with you, just like my kids do. So.
Yep. I mean, I've heard of that technique. I've used it before and called in some toms for some other people. I will say it doesn't always work. If you get like a real skittish hen, you start calling over her, they'll just blow them right out. They don't want anything to do with it. So it's definitely not a trick that works all the time, but when it does work, it's fatal.
Good stuff, man.
Yep.
So we've got Derek and Jacob from Go Wild. Tonight we're going to talk about the fly fishing stuff. Derek, you were introduced to us as kind of a jack of all trades that can do everything in the outdoor world. So that was part of this idea, is to get this discussion together. And then Jacob, Derek says you are the fly fishing expert amongst the crew. So that's what we've brought in, the best of the best to help us dissect fly fishing.
The best you could find.
The best of the best.
The best you can find.
The best of the best for fly fishing 101, okay? So I'll just lead into this, but like I've been, oh man, I think I was about 10 or 11 the first time I was introduced to it. Huge, huge hiatus there between the next time I really got into it. Going up to the cabin up in Pennsylvania, one of the things these guys will do is we hunt turkeys in the morning in the spring, and then it's brook trout and other trout in the afternoon. And I didn't have a fly rod last year. So one of the things I put on my list of things to do was we're going to get the fly fishing gear and get this figured out. I've got a cousin whose husband out west has been a fly fishing guide for years, that kind of stuff. They just had a baby, so he's like MIA for the moment. But here we are. It's spring. I still don't have this fly fishing rod. I still have a million questions. And I just want to start to grasp what we can – What I need to do selfishly to figure this all out, okay? So that said, if we're going to start with fly fishing, where do we start? What do we need to do? You got my background now, so what are you going to do? What are we going to do?
Well, obviously, there's particular equipment that's going to help you in this pursuit, the first being a fly rod. And kind of what I tell everybody when they start out is like, look, you're going to, if you go to a fly shop or you get online and you start looking at the fly rods that are available, there's a zero weight, a one weight, two weight, three weight, all the way up to like 12. So what do those numbers mean? And my best recommendation is to, if you're going to be fishing trout, smallmouth, largemouth bass, panfish, that kind of thing, just go with a five weight. So a five weight rod is kind of the middle of the pack. It's great for bluegill. It's can be overpowering for some bluegill, depending upon how stiff the rod is, but it's a great kind of middle ground to get you started. And once you got the rod picked out, spend one tip here, spend more money on your rod than you do the reel. As I'm a conventional guy too, a spin fish bait cast. You can spend more on those reels because that reel does a whole lot more of the fishing process or technique than a fly reel. Most of the time, the fly reel is just going to be holding your line. And so go with a reel that is well-built, but not, don't break the bank on the reel. Spend more money on your rod. Having a really cheap rod will make it harder for you to learn to cast. So you want to be able to feel that rod loading when you're doing the casting motion. So on your back cast, you want to be able to feel that rod flex and then come forward. A cheap rod will feel more like a broomstick. So out of your collective budget, you're better off putting more money into the rod.
Okay.
So once, yeah, I'll stop there. That's a bunch.
With the number again, what'd you say that the numbers went from, and what, like, what's the scale?
Yeah, so the smallest is a zero weight, and then it goes up 12 weight, and every number in between there. So,
and so
just think,
zero is stiff or flexible?
A zero is like a, just consider a small fish.
Oh, okay.
Very, very ultra light. Mm-hmm. A 12 weight is going to be more like your heavy saltwater, even offshore type stuff.
Gotcha. So five is kind of the middle of the road there.
Yep. Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, fly fishing can be crazy with numbers and nomenclature and acronyms and all like widgets and tools and all kinds of stuff that go along with it. You don't need all that stuff. I mean, there's kind of the basic gear set that you need to get started.
So when it comes to, you said spending more money on the rod than the reel and stuff, what ballpark would you consider a solid, a good price for kind of that? Somebody wants to get good stuff, maybe not all the way in, but doesn't want something that's going to break the first go out. Because I mean, in hunting, you know, you can buy the cheapest thing, or you can buy, I always consider it like you get in the Kia or you get in the Cadillac, or do you want that Chevy that's kind of in the middle, right? That's not going to be break the bank, but it's also not the cheapest thing in the world. What kind of price range would you say, or isn't there one?
Yeah. Probably the easiest thing to equate it to on the hunting side is archery. You'll see a lot of comparisons between fly fishing and archery just from the technique, but the equipment as well. There's a lot of bows where you can go, like Bear makes a ready to hunt package that is, it's the bow except for the arrows, basically everything you need to get going. They do that similar thing with fly rods, but within those kits of everything to get started, I would recommend the higher end of those kits, because some of those lower end kits is where they sacrifice on the rod to give you everything. They, you know, they sacrifice on the quality of the rod first.
So I bought one of those $50 kits from Cabela's a few years ago, and it was miserable. I mean, it was just the, I mean, like you said, a broomstick. That's a good analogy. So get a decent rod, reel. The one thing that like threw me off was, and talking about the weights of the rods, like the weights of the line, I never really understood. You think like 5 pound test, 6 pound test, 10 pound test, you know, on a spinning rod, like that's super easy. But you've got the backing and the tippet, and kind of run down like the more intricate.
Hang on.
Unless you got something, but what you got?
Hang on, Paul. We're gonna get into that. I'm working on building my shopping.
You want the
cart.
Price point? The price point.
I'm building my shopping cart here on Go Wild.
I see you on the internet.
I gotta
right
make sure I got all the right stuff going, right? But seriously, yes. So that you guys, I'm going to refer to the website because you guys have a nice store with different things on there. But like the one rod, it's got this heavy, fast, medium, heavy, fast option, a 2-piece medium, heavy, fast. What is this? The 6-stick casting rod. Like there, I don't see where a number comes into play. Are these all going to be like a 5 or what?
So those rods you're looking at there are actually a spinning rod.
So I'm in the wrong section.
So. A little foreshadowing. We have a fly fishing partner, Perfect Hatch, that we work with. They are bringing out rods and reels with, I just talked to our man guy over there, and he said, I just got my hands on them. They're fantastic. So very soon you are going to see a complete kit that we build out, rod, reel, line, backing. Here's everything you need. Just go buy this, trust me, and use it. If you're starting out though, those kits, so Orvis makes one. I want to say it's like $200 for their entry level kit. Their entry level and then their next step up rods are really good for an entry level point. Now, $200 is obviously a lot more than the $60 kit that you're going to get at Cabela's, but trust me, it's worth it because I've cast both of them, and trying to teach my son, who's almost 9, how to cast the really cheap rod was really tough, but I give him my rod and he can nail it. So there is really something to being able to feel that rod. So $200 on a kit, call it $250 by the time you kind of get some flies and some tippet. We can talk through like what the heck tippet is, because most anglers don't even, you know, recognize that unless you fly fish. So you got the rod, got the reel, you got the fly line. On the reel first is the backing, which is kind of like a braided fishing line. So, you know, most spinning or traditional guys are familiar with braided fishing line. It's very similar. It's like a 20, 30 pound test braided line. Then, so your fly line will attach to that. Then you've got a leader, and most people will use a tapered leader. A lot of the beginner kits, they come with a tapered leader. And then tied to the leader, you'll put some tippet, which is just a straight piece of monofilament that you'll attach your fly to. That monofilament could be fluorocarbon or it could be nylon. So now to answer the size questions that you got. So again, you're going to match the rod 5 weight to your fly line, 5 weight line. You're talking about the cheap rod that you have. I will actually overline those. So the one that I have for my son, I'll put a 6 weight line on that 5 weight rod so that it flexes more and he can feel it. But rule of thumb, match your rod to your fly line.
When it comes to the rod, you know, size doesn't matter, or does it? But the length, the length is something that comes into play. What do you suggest there? It's not like draw length on a bow or something like that, is it? Or how does that come into play?
No, it has a lot more to do with castability and reach, like how far you can actually reach with the rod itself. An 8.6 to a 9 foot rod in a 5 weight is a great place. There's tons of them out there, so it's not going to be hard something for you to find. And it's a great kind of beginner length, or, you know, just standard. I mean, I still buy a lot of 9 foot rods. Most of my rods are 9 foot or 8.6.
Got it. All right. So we're spending more money on the rod because we need the quality rod, 5 weight, 8.6 to 9.
Mm-hmm.
The reel, we're going up. We're going to get a good reel, but that's not where you're going to sink all your money in. And then when it comes to the actual line part, we're going line to leader to tippet. Is that right?
Correct. Yep. Nailed it. So now I'll tell you. So the rod and the line number matchup is pretty easy to figure out. Just match them, get the same numbers. But then when you start talking about the leader, this is where it's more similar to traditional bass fishing or conventional fishing. You kind of want to think about the flies that you're going to be using and the fish that you're going after. So if you're using really tiny flies, you want to get a smaller diameter tippet. If you're going to use big bass popping bugs, you're going to want a bigger diameter tippet because it'll help you actually cast and turn over that fly to get it out. So my recommendation is to start with like a 4X if you're going after trout. And these numbers are a little weird because the bigger the number, the smaller the diameter. So 7X is really small. 6, 5, 4, 3, and 2 is where I start to use, you know, that's kind of where I'm getting into for my bass fishing is the 2X. And then, of course, 1 and 0 I reserve for carp or saltwater species.
Sharks, whales.
Big old sharks. Yeah. Those Ohio River sharks.
Right. I think those are dead bodies, aren't they?
yes.
Man, there's a lot in there. There's a lot in there. So, Derek, when you were getting in, how long have you been fly fishing?
Probably a little over 2 years now. Jacob here is the one that got me into it.
All those good friends and their peer pressure get you into stuff like that, right?
Make you COVID spend money. COVID's actually what got me into it.
Right.
Everything shut down. So, and me and Jacob had been talking about it and we had some time. So he said, why not?
That's great. That's why I annoy my family with turkey calls now, thanks to Paul. So, when you got into this, what was your biggest challenge? I mean, obviously you had a pretty good mentor there, but
yeah.
If you're somebody who doesn't and they're just like me going to start screwing around in the local water holes or wherever I can find a spot just to get used to it. What kind of advice do you have there?
I guess the two things I would say would be the biggest challenge. One is, and thankfully I have Jacob, so I can just annoy him with this all the time, but is remembering what all these numbers mean. I know it sounds really overwhelming now. You do start to get a better understanding of what all he's talking about right now, but I still have times where I'll have to text Jacob. And I mean, we just did it a couple days ago.
Yesterday.
I'm working on setting up a 9 weight rod for going after steelhead or striper and stuff like that, a little bigger fish. So I had to annoy Jacob and say, okay, what size backing, what pound backing do I need? What kind of tippet should I get for this? Cause those numbers are hard to remember. I would say, don't let that be a roadblock for you. There's tons of resources out there to get, you know, those questions answered. So that was one challenge. And then I guess getting into the fundamentals of it, and from what I understand, this is a common challenge for people, but is allowing enough time on the back cast. So, you know, everyone's kind of familiar with the idea of fly fishing. You know, you're throwing the fly up in the air, and your back cast is when the line's loading behind you. And a big common mistake that a lot of people make when they get into it, and I mean, I'm still making it 2 years into it, is you don't allow enough time for that line to load behind you on the back cast. And when you don't allow that to happen, when you go to cast out, you'll get a wind knot or
dump it,
or you dump it. Yeah. So it's just that can be a challenge to overcome.
What's dump it? What's that mean?
So if you don't let your fly line get straightened out behind you on your back cast, when you come forward, it's like you're pulling it forward too fast, and it's going to kind of fall in a clump, or not going to straighten all the way out. Mm-hmm. So you can either dump your back cast if you let it go too far, too slow. That is one of the toughest things about figuring out the cast, is the timing and the cadence. Every rod's going to be different. Each line brand is going to load a little bit different for rods. I mean, there's a lot of things, just like arrows and bows, there's things that are going to factor into it. The first thing I tell, okay, you bought your rod, do not go to a yummy looking trout stream. That's like one of the biggest mistakes somebody can make. Go to a pond, go throw to bluegill. You know, is somewhere where you can not have to mess with moving water, because that's a total other complexity that goes into it. So figure out casting on a pond or even just in grass somewhere.
So the there's multiple like styles of casts, right? I mean, there's just like the traditional cast. The one that I tried was I think it's called like a D loop or a D cast. For like, is that one where you? It was impossible. I couldn't figure it out. I watched 1,000 YouTube videos, and I'm just like, you know what? I'm going to just try just like the basic. So like, I got really overwhelmed with the different like cast types. What's like the standard, like the easiest that's the most effective?
Yeah, I mean, just a basic forward and a back and forward cast. So you just think about your line and rod moving in a linear space. You'll hear people talk about 10 and 2. That works for some people. They do understand that. Another lesson when you're starting to cast is traditional spin fishermen or bait casting use a lot of wrist. You want to try and limit as much of that as you can with a fly rod, because it can also affect the line or the path that your line is taking. So just start with a traditional back and forward cast. You know, there's roll casts for where you're in tight spaces, and there's a bunch of stuff that you can get into. But again, I'll reference teaching my, you know, 8-year-old. There's a lot of times where you're not casting like a river runs through it. This is not Brad Pitt. There's a lot of times where you're literally just using the tension of the moving water to build the tension on the rod, and then flipping your line back upstream. And so it can get overcomplicated if you just try to do too much with it.
Mons, what do you got? I got a lot of questions. I see you deep in thought looking at stuff on Go Wild's website. I know what you're doing.
I'm bouncing around here. I'm not sure, because I'm a gear junkie. It's like, I don't like going out if I don't have what I feel like I need, and if I'm not comfortable with everything. So the idea of
he's going down a black hole right now. This is why
I'm not into waterfowl, because I know how much is going to be involved with that, and like, I can just see the dollars racking up. And
That happens.
Yeah,
I can kind of insert a quick little story.
Go ahead, Derek.
Yeah. Well, I was just gonna kind of reinforce what Jacob's saying about the rod, a little story, if you will, for me. So like I said, Jacob got me into fly fishing, got me everything I needed, and I go out to ponds and I'm practicing on ponds, and you know, me being me, I broke my rod, and it was sad. So in the meantime, I was waiting to, you know, get a replacement rod. Jacob lent me this kind of cheaper rod, and it's like what he's talking about. And I felt the difference immediately. I mean, I hated it throwing that cheap rod. And so definitely what Jacob's saying, you know, spend more money on a rod, get a decent rod. And that will help significantly with your casting.
Yeah. And I, so, you know, if you want some, Andrew, if like real actual products direction helps you, the rod that I gave initially, I sold Derek a rod that is a St. Croix Imperial. I want to say they're like 220 new. If you look them up, they still make the rods. They're great. They've changed versions since the initial one I had. But to kind of, if you're looking at, I want an entry level rod. I'm a gear nerd. I want something that's good. If I'm going to start, I want it to be good. Like, that is a great rod to get started on a really, you know, on a good foot. Like I said, those Orvis pack rods, the Encounter and Clearwater, are kind of their entry level things. Those are both really good. But those Imperials are fantastic. Another brand that makes really good entry level stuff is Echo. So it was started by one of the Ray Jeffs. I can't remember which one, Steve, I think. He's a phenomenal caster. And so he created rods that are honestly, like, some of the rods are a lot cheaper than what, or a lot better than what they asked for them. And so, you know, if you're going to do it and you're willing to spend a little bit more money, St. Croix Imperial. If you want to save some money, look at the Echoes, look at the Orvis. The store brand rods just are not the way to go if you want to have a good experience starting out.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that I would have stuck with fly fishing if I'd started on that rod that I was using when I broke the first one, because it was so frustrating.
Yeah. Now, Echo is another name that I've been exposed to in the past, but for a stupid question, as I'm looking through some of these websites, single hand rod versus two hand rods, what?
Yeah, the cast that Paul was talking about, that's more playing towards the double hand rods, two hand rods, and like, you know, what Derek was saying, he's getting a bigger rod to go after steelhead. A lot of steelhead, salmon people will use those two hand rods, and those are typically longer, and you use two hands because it's a shooting line. So this cast that you make, you're literally bringing it across your body and then throwing it back out to where you're unfurling all this line to cast across a bunch of different current speeds, which is very different from a traditional fly cast where, you know, I'm trying to hit that seam and I'm going to lay my fly line into it, where with the salmon and steelhead, you're trying to get it out there and swing through all of those different current speeds. So it just takes a little bit different cast, longer rod, heavier lines, different ball game. Unless you're going to dedicate a rod to steelhead, I would just stick with single hand.
Gotcha. So I guess the next question, and figuring, okay, we figure out a rod, reel, line, leader, tippet. It's the fly, right? That's part of what makes this way different. Now, conventionally fishing, when I go out, it's I have, I don't know, 30 different lures and stuff in my box, and I'm probably going to try all of them as the day goes on, because I'm going to get frustrated and one's not going to work. So we'll just keep going down the line until something, because I'm not that great of a fisherman. But what are we talking about when we're talking about all these flies? Because to me, there's a boatload of things here. I know you can tie your own. We kind of we're talking about that off air. But like, where do you start with that? And I think I've got an idea from what I've heard other people say, but I'm just curious, you know, how you guys are going to approach that.
Yeah. So this is where I'm definitely going to plug Go Wild, because we've done a little bit of that work for you with Perfect Hatch. They have some great fly assortments where, if you came to me and said, hey, I just want to go chase bass this summer, okay, go get the Bass Popper assortment that's on there. And, you know, in some cases, like if you're just going to be throwing huge flies, I would maybe say go up to like a 7-weight rod. If it's something that you're going to also use for trout, you can get by with that five or even a six weight. But those flies will be dependent upon what fish you're going after. Then the next thing you want to look at is, like most fishing, what's the local forage? If you're going after really picky trout, you're going to start talking about getting into really tiny aquatic bugs that you've probably never seen or heard of or care about in your entire life until now. You're trying to catch these fish, because a 30-inch brown trout will eat a very, very tiny bug. And sometimes they'll get really selective on those things. And so you have to kind of think about what's in that river, that body of water that you're fishing. But with anything, you can go crazy and try to get every fly to accommodate every situation, but there's some go-to standards out there. If you are going to go after trout, you want to have some midge patterns. And these are like basic. I'm not naming a single fly. I'm naming like a family of flies. So midge patterns, which is a very small, very simple, sometimes just thread on a hook with a bead head that can honestly catch fish almost anywhere. And then there's some bigger nymphs like Copper Johns, beadhead rabbit's fur, beadhead pheasant tail. They just look like bugs in the water. So you don't have to get overcomplicated. There's tons of stuff out there with crazy names, but every river is going to have something that looks similar to these few flies. Then you can start talking about the bait fish or streamer patterns. A woolly bugger, if you fly fish for a day, you'll hear about the woolly bugger. It is it's a great pattern for people learning to fly fish, because you can't really fish it wrong. It's one of those things that if you cast it out and you make a bad cast, it's okay. Let it float down and then strip it, which is a little different. Stripping is what you call bringing the line back to you. You don't reel it in like you would with a spinning rod or a bait casting rod. You strip it in with your hand. So woolly buggers, a couple nymphs, some midges, and then what I would recommend is some sort of hopper or kind of late summer, fall, dry fly type pattern that's big, floats, has foam, because you can also use that like a bobber with those other flies that I just discussed. So just imagine that big foam, floaty hopper pattern on top. You tie a little bit of tippet off the back of the hook. You put one of those midges or the nymphs hanging off of that. Makes it easier to detect strikes. They may actually bite that grasshopper. Those grasshoppers are great for bass, panfish. And so get some things that are kind of flexible when you're looking at what flies you're going to buy, because it's stupid how much, you know, $4 for something that's half an inch big. It can get out of hand. So ask somebody, you know, that fly fishes around you, what flies tend to work well for them. Or go to what are the top 10 trout flies. I guarantee if you get, you know, half a dozen of each of the top three, you're going to be okay.
Yeah, there's a lot of, and that's funny to me because they say there are these bugs. I'm not sure I always see the actual bug. It just kind of looks like a fuzzy thing with a little hook in there. But I guess the fish don't care, do they?
Nope. Sometimes they do, man. And when they do, it's frustrating. But in most cases, you figure if that water is moving a foot per second past them, they're making quick decisions and quick mistakes. And you just hope they make more mistakes than good decisions.
Gotcha. So we got the line, we got the rod, the reel, line leader, tippet, and we came up with some flies. What else do we need to be out there? I'm not saying you have to have everything right at once, but to be successful, to be comfortable, to enjoy your time out there. I mean, are we talking? One guy I was with last year, I mean, he looked like Jungle Jack out there with everything he had with his waders. We're talking his vest. He had the little chest harness. And then within there, there was more tippet, more line, more flies, more. There's a, you know, basically a sewing kit to put everything back together. What are some other the accessory type of things that you might take with you when you're doing this?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. Fly anglers tend to want to look like a TGI Friday server with a bunch of flair on there.
What movie is that where they're like,
Office Space?
You need 17 pieces of flair.
Office Space.
Yeah, that's right. Right.
Yep. That movie gets referenced a lot, especially with me and Dan in Go Wild Warehouse whenever the printer's not working.
You see my stapler?
If you've seen the movie, you understand.
Yep. So, I mean, that's what's the industry is built around, selling you widgets and tools. Honestly, like, when we picked out some of the products that we brought in to Go Wild, we tried to be really intentional. As I have grown in my fly fishing career, I have actually shrunk the amount of stuff I'm taking with me. I've kind of done the same thing hunting too. Where can I shred something that I'm taking with me? And so that's where, as you're fishing and you figure out what flies work, you don't have to take as many fly boxes because you don't have as many flies. You're going to get more selective with your patterns. Tippet, I'll usually have, you know, at least 3 or 4 spools, because if something happens and you do have to repair that part of your leader where it tapers down in sizes, you want to have some of the other sizes to kind of build that back up. But a net is good to have because it allows you to honestly just take care of the fish better. When you do bring the fish in and you got to get the fly out of its mouth, particularly with trout, they're kind of a little bit harder to get the hook out of their mouth, and they're slimy and they flop around. So a net is better for the fish so that you can get the flies out of their mouth. A pair of hemostats, or I actually have a pair of nippers hemostat combo, so I can cut the line and have the hemostats to get the hook out. If you don't do the combo, then you would want some sort of nippers just to cut line when you're out there. What am I missing as far as gadgetry?
I was gonna say, you know, for anybody out there that's just wanting to get into fly fishing, like what we were talking about, you know, go to a pond, start there, and you know, if you have your rod and your reel and you know everything loaded on your reel, your fly line, leader, tippet, and all that, and some flies, I mean, that's all you need. And if someone wants to get into it, like, that's it, that's all you need, and you're in it. When you start, you know, going to these actual streams and fishing for trout or smallmouth or stuff like that, it's when you start getting into accessories, some of which you've already mentioned. I know this is kind of an obvious one, but waders, need those.
Okay.
You know, depending on the time of year also, you know, you might not, we'll wet wade here in the summer.
Stupid question on the waders. I'm not going to lie, I'm on Orvis's website right now. But they've got waders. Hold on a second. Well, they call it waders, and then they got wading boots. Do you have to have both, or do you wear the waders alone, or do you put the boots on top of the, how does that work?
It depends on the style of waders. So when I first started, I just had like a super cheap pair of waders that I bought off Amazon, and they're like kind of your traditional like duck hunter type waders. The boots are already in it, and that's just what it is. Now, when you start getting into, I wouldn't say expensive, I mean, they make cheaper options, but getting into more of like fly fishing waders, it'll be a wader that has like a neoprene styled boot in it, and then, or sock, I guess is what I should say. And then you actually buy wading boots that you put your foot into. And Jacob might be able to explain a little bit better, but the reason basically they're doing that is so now you have better traction and mobility when you're in the water with that actual boot versus the style of wader that has the boot, you know, sewed in and part of the wader. And then they make two different style, like boots, as far as like a felt bottom or, it's just rubber on the other one, isn't it?
Yeah. Rubber. And then they'll sometimes put metal studs in them just to give you more traction on the rocks and stuff.
And some states actually don't allow felt bottom boots. So that's kind of why they make the other ones. I have felt bottom boots. So when you're talking about like waders and wader boots and all that, that's kind of a system, if you will. You'll get a wader that goes it has that neoprene sock that you then buy boots for, and then you just put it on like you're putting on a boot.
Looking at some of these boots, I mean, they just look like boots to me. Mm-hmm. Is this where you can just get an old pair of shoes, old pair of hiking boots, and wear those instead, or is there something actually to this?
So the felt bottoms that Derek mentioned, if you're starting out in a state that allows felt bottoms, I highly recommend it because, I mean, those rocks with moss on them can be slick. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, again, like you want to have a good experience out the gate. So I recommend felt soles. We don't have some of the big problems here in Kentucky, so it's you know, it's not outlawed here.
What are the problems with a felt sole?
So there's types of mussels out there that can actually end up on a felt sole, and then there's an invasive plant called didymo, or sometimes you're called rock snot, and it's an invasive aquatic plant that will take over the bottom of the stream bed. And so when that happens, all of the bug and fish reproduction, that kind of stuff, is hindered because they can't get to the bottom of the creek. So in places where they're having didymo problems, or, you know, there's already at risk because of other invasive species, and so they just kind of blanket say, we don't want any felt soles, we don't want that stuff coming here. You'll see signage by most of the rivers, so it's not a surprise. Or when you buy your fishing license, it's typically on Fish and Wildlife's site if it's outlawed there. I think Missouri is probably the closest.
Yeah, if I remember right, because I looked into it actually when I was wanting to buy some nicer waders and wading boots and all that, there's really not a whole lot of states out there that don't allow felt right now. So I would say for the most part, you're probably good getting felt most places. Definitely make sure of that before you make that purchase. But
good cleaning habits of felt will prevent it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, obviously rubber is the, if you're any concern at all, rubber is the way to go.
Good enough.
When we were running down the rod and reel line, all that stuff, we skipped over the final piece, the knot to the fly. So is that, I mean, can I just use the same knot that I use on my spinning rod, my 8-ounce jig, or is there something fancy that I have to do?
Man, knots is, that's a rabbit hole to go down.
I've literally seen books about knots.
If you want to hear like a nerdy fly fisherman go on for hours, ask about knots or bug life and just sit back and have a drink.
So, we'll do that.
You know, there's a knot that you're going to use to tie the fly line to the leader. I'll even go a step back. The backing to the fly line. Then there's a knot for the fly line to the leader, and a knot for the leader to the tippet. Then the knot for the tippet to the fly. Tippet to the fly, clinch knot is kind of the go-to, improved clinch knot. There's also one that I've started using lately called the Davy knot. Check it out. It's really easy to tie. It's more about smaller form on those because some of the knots I use, like when I'm bass fishing, it'll create a nice little cylinder on the top of that. It's not a big deal with the bass, but when you're talking about a fly that's really small and now you've added a cylinder of a knot on top of it, it can sometimes be fairly visible and obvious. So that's why you want to kind of switch up the knots that you're using for flies. The knots through the entire system, just Google Arbor knots. A double surgeon's knot is good to know. And then a uni knot. And then, you know, you can Google easily and find where they go in the system. But that's kind of the ones to...
I use a blood knot a lot too.
Yeah, blood knots. It's all about what you're comfortable with. You feel like you can tie quick on the stream.
What's your preferred species of fish to target, Jared?
Oh, man.
Trout guy, bass guy, all of it, doesn't matter.
So, gun to my head, and it's the last time I get to go fishing, I'm going after smallmouth without question. It's a combination of how pissed off and fun they are to fish for, and then just the places that they live. You kind of get the trout scenery, you know, stream, creek, moving water. But then they're just angry and they fight hard and they're fun to catch.
Well, that's good stuff. I think we got a pretty good basic 101 on fly fishing gear here, but man, I'm looking forward to the kit you guys are going to put together for me, so I don't have to think real hard on this.
Yeah, that's, I get asked that so much, man. It's like, just tell me what I need to get started. Derek, it's like, okay, I've got this rod. I upgraded. I'll sell you this rod. And then, you know, here's, get these things. Those kits, when we bring those on board, are going to be a godsend, because you get asked and go wild. You know, I want to do it. And they're reasonably priced too. They're not going to crush you. Honestly, like, you're going to have more money for gas and flies. And that's what is going to be important, because the other parts are just tools and you want to get out and fish.
Awesome. Well, Paul, you got anything else?
I do. Do you guys, Jacob, Derek, feel free to answer this. Either one of you guys. Do you guys go across the country to fly fish? Are you that deep into it, or do you just stick to your own territory?
So we fish a lot around here, obviously. I get asked this question a lot too. It's like, especially here, because fly fishing isn't too huge like it is out west. I'll tell people, oh yeah, I fly fish. And where can you fly fish around here? Anywhere you can conventional fish, you can fly fish. So, you know, we'll fly fish around here. We got some good creeks and streams, not really native trout in Kentucky, but they do a pretty good job of stocking them with stockers. So that's fun. I also, like, when I go out west to hunt, I always take my fly fishing gear, and, you know, the hunt is, for me, is the priority, but if I have extra time, then of course I'm going to go fly fishing. You know, probably one of the most wonderful experiences I had was fly fishing the Tongue River in Wyoming, after an antelope hunt. I mean, that was incredible, and to catch some native brown trout. So, you know, I'm traveling for the hunting, I guess, to answer your question there, but then the fly fishing is kind of a secondary thing. We're kind of loosely talking about taking a trip a little further up north to do some steelhead fishing, later this summer. I know Jacob does a little bit more traveling for fishing than I do, since I focus more on the hunting.
Yeah. The way I approach it is, yes, I do take trips for fly fishing. But if I'm traveling, the first thing I do when I find out I have to go somewhere is look at what water's around. The great thing about fly rods and fly gear is that it's extremely packable. You know, it's most rods. We didn't really discuss this, but there are one piece rods, there's two piece rods, but predominantly you're going to see four piece rods that pack down into, you know, like a 36 inch rod tube. And so if I'm getting on an airplane, it goes on with me very easily. And so it is a part of my travel, if it's not the reason I'm traveling.
You know, I just thinking, I think when we come down for Send It Slam, you know, we might have to just set up a little fly fishing demo tutorial workshop.
We can absolutely do that. Yeah.
Hey, Brad, by the way, this is what we were thinking. Should we just break it to him now? We're going to do a little fly fishing demo over here in this corner. So.
Yeah, I mean, and we were talking today. This is probably going to get me in trouble, but we were talking today about some of the activities that we're just going to have at the festival. And, you know, one of those being some like casting type games. And so I'm all for doing a little clinic, teach people how to fly cast. And the more people that fly fish, they get out and see these places. You all know this. Get out, they see these places, they see these animals, they see these fish. They're going to give a rip about them. And tomorrow they're going to be figuring out how can they protect them. Mm-hmm. So I don't care what your background is. If you've never touched a fishing rod in your entire life, just come with me, and we can make you fall in love with it.
Beautiful. Beautiful, beautiful. Well, I think on that note, we'll call this a show, and we might have some more questions as time goes on. And I listen to this again, and so we might have to do it again if you guys are all right with that.
Yeah, and hey, plug and go wild. I'll do it all day. Get in there, find me, Jacob Knight. Ask me any fly fishing questions you have. I'd be happy to help.
Yeah, this dude lives for it. So,
yes, both these guys are very active and very, very good to get your questions answered. So, gentlemen, we appreciate you. Paul, if you got nothing else, we'll just take it there.
Thank you, guys.
Yep. Take care.
Thanks, fellas.
Yeah, thank you.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.